Good morning. And welcome to First Christian Church. If you're new here, normally you would find our pastor, Timothy Moore, standing where I am now. My name, obviously, to those of you who know me, is Timothy Kuntz, and I'm filling in while he is off today. If you're in the parking lot listening to your radio at FM 88.3, you also are most welcome. This morning, we will look at all 14 verses of Isaiah chapter 58, and I will keep my talk to about 14 minutes. We may get out early enough to get the roast out of the oven, or go to the restaurant, or the grocery store, or Walmart before the other churches get there. Let me begin by praying. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. A long time ago, I was reading through the Bible in a year. Verse 11 of chapter 58 caught my attention. I was at Fort Devens in the Army Security Agency learning how to fix radio jammers and direction finders. Normally, when I share with folks, I like to share things that I see the Lord doing right now, or at least this last week. This has been one of those weeks. What I have to share is deeply ingrained in my experiences, my thinking, my relationship with my Maker. I live in this chapter. The house of Jacob, referred to in this chapter, we'll get to that in a second, is the nation of Israel. As you might recall from Genesis chapter 32, Jacob was given the name Israel because he wrestled with God and man and prevailed. Jacob was his old name. Israel became his new name. Remember when the prophet Isaiah, this is back in chapter 6, said, "Woe is me, for I am ruined, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I live in a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King." These folks, Israel, the house of Jacob, were not making God happy. Chapter 58 is one of many chapters where God is passing on his guidance to the nation of Israel through the prophet Isaiah. I want you to read between the lines and look to see how and why God loved his people. Here's how chapter 58 got my attention. It begins like this. "Cry aloud, spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their transgression, to the house of Jacob their sins." In this first verse, God tells Isaiah to speak up and sound off. And then God confides to Isaiah his frustrations with Israel. I can just imagine God saying, "Oy vey." But this is what he did say. "Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask me of righteous judgments and delight to draw near to God." He then explains to Isaiah how Israel had whined to him. "Why have we fasted, and thou seest it not? Why have we humbled ourselves, and thou takest no knowledge of it?" He responds to them and explains to them their error. "Behold, on the day of your fast, you seek your own pleasure and oppress all your workers. Behold, you fast only to quarrel and fight and to hit with wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice to be heard on high." And then God goes a little deeper by explaining in detail what the folks in Israel were doing in their fasting. He does it by asking questions. God is asking each question to these people in Israel, and maybe to us. Is such the fast that I choose a day for a man to humble himself? Is it to bow down his head like a rush, to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? He explains then by drawing a sharp contrast between their behavior and what he, God himself, wants. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and to bring the homeless poor into your house, and when you see the naked to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Stage is set. God has told Isaiah to go to Israel and proclaim boldly their wrongdoings. And then he explains what will happen if Israel changes. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness will go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, "Here I am." This week, I have repeatedly called on him. Darlene has been in the ER and the ICU in Pulaski, first in Pulaski and now in ICU in Roanoke Memorial. She is healing. Thanks be to God and fine medical care. He goes on by laying out conditions and making promises. Look for the ifs and the thens. If you do this, then that will happen. If you take away from the midst of you the yoke, the pointing of the finger, the speaking wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in darkness, and your gloom be as the noonday. When you walk out of this sanctuary, and the sun is shining brightly, it might be a little cloudy today, and you're squinting, that is how you will feel at the lowest point of your gloom. I'm reminded of this verse nearly every Sunday. And here is verse 11. And the Lord will guide you continually. That verse caught my attention back in May of 1971. I made a commitment right there to God. I told God I would figure out what came before it and after it in order to do it. Why? I wanted that. It mattered not then, it matters not now, where I am or what condition I'm in. If God is leading me, I'm on the right track, headed to the right place. He continues, and the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire with good things and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. This was spoken or written to the folks that lived in the desert. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. He doesn't stop, though. And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. My guess is there is no one here who does not have some ancient ruins in their lives. I know, I do. God promises to rebuild those ancient ruins. Now let's back up one verse. Two ways of looking at verse 10. I think both are valid and both are needed. Verse 10 says, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted. One can look beyond the literal meanings of these two words. There is an additional meaning, a spiritual meaning. Did not the philosopher Pascal say to the effect that in every person there is a God-shaped vacuum that only God can fill? So when people are hungry to know God, should we not be responsible and introduce them to their Maker, to tell them of the good news that Christ has risen from the dead, having died to pay the penalty for their transgressions? We have experienced many afflictions. The desire of the afflicted is to become unafflicted. Spiritually, the universal affliction is often referred to in one word, sin. What then? Is it not our responsibility, our privilege, to teach people how to lead holy lives as disciples of Christ? Now, the last two verses of the chapter. I can just imagine how God said this. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. There you have it, 14 verses. Remember, if you would, what the Spirit of God has shown you. It may well be different than me. Three things do come to my mind. If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted. And the Lord will guide you continually. And I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. May the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob bless each one of you, your families, and the people to whom you minister. Thank you.